China is buying a whole bunch of U.S. land, Biden has the Rona, and we're in a recession. Hey, it's the Chicks from the Chicks on the Right podcast. Download and subscribe to our daily podcast to hear us pick apart and pick on the news of the day. Subscribe on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello and welcome to the Byron York Show, the No Chit Chat podcast. We like to get right into it, and what we're going to get into today is a history lesson. We're going to look at what Benny Thompson did on January 6th, 2005. Benny Thompson, of course, being the Democratic chairman of the House January 6th committee. So to look into this, you got to go back in time. And you've got to go back to the 2004 presidential election. It was a close one. George W. Bush was the Republican incumbent president, and he won re-election over the Democrat, Senator John Kerry. And Bush won re-election with 286 electoral votes to Kerry's 251. Now, if you're out there adding things up, they're supposed to add up to 538, and they don't. That's because in a move that was never really explained, there was one so-called faithless elector in the 2004 race. And the faithless elector voted for John Edwards, the Democratic senator who was Kerry's running mate. So anyway, Bush wins 286 to 251 in this one wacko elector voting for John Edwards. Now, election day was November the 2nd, 2004. Vote counting goes into the night and in the early morning of November the 3rd. And it all came down to one state, Ohio. Ohio had 20 electoral votes. If Ohio went for Bush, Bush would win a second term. If Ohio went for Kerry, Kerry would become president. Ohio was the decisive state. Now, if you weren't around or you weren't following at the time, the early exit polls that day showed Kerry with a solid lead in Ohio. Now, there were many Democrats, and maybe some in the press too, who simply assumed that that would be the final result. And in the early evening, this is kind of a legendary story, Robert Shrum, the longtime Democratic advisor, strategist, campaign official, who was Kerry's top advisor. Shrum ran a lot of losing Democratic campaigns. Shrum says to Kerry, quote, "May I be the first to say, Mr. President." Okay, so you knew it wasn't going to happen then. Kerry's lead, if it ever existed, did not last. Count continues, Bush took the lead. He wins Ohio by roughly 51 to 49%. In the end, in Ohio, Bush prevailed by more than 100,000 votes. Wasn't all that close in Ohio. But then something odd happened. Democratic activists began to claim that Bush had cheated in Ohio. Now, first they accused Republicans of suppressing the vote. Of course, that's not really new. They always accuse Republicans of suppressing the vote. And then they blamed the GOP for long lines at polling places, another way of suppressing the vote. And then came what today, I guess, we would call the crazies. Democrats began to embrace, this is some Democrats, not all, some Democrats began to embrace theories that electronic voting machines had secretly switched votes from Kerry to Bush. There was a lot of discussion, which was amplified on the internet, although these were really pre-social media days, amplified on the internet, about the machine maker Diebold and the alleged security flaws in the machines that made them susceptible to hacking. There was speculation that maybe Karl Rove, Bush's top advisor, had personally hacked voting machines in Ohio to give the race to George W. Bush, the race that John Kerry rightfully won. Now, some Democrats in Congress joined in the speculation. The leader among them was the late Representative John Conyers, who started an investigation of the allegations less than a month after the election. Now, you have to remember, Democrats were in the minority in the House at the time. Conyers, who was the ranking member of the House Judiciary Committee, had limited investigative authority. So, on December 8th, okay, so we're talking a month and a few days after the election, Conyers held a forum on the Ohio situation. Couldn't really call it a hearing. He wasn't the chairman of the committee. Can't call a hearing, but he held a forum on the Ohio situation. And it was filled with suspicion and speculation about Ohio and the election. The speculation, maybe the CEO of Diebold, a Bush supporter, he was a Bush supporter, manipulated his machines to throw the election to the president. Maybe Ken Blackwell, who was the Ohio Secretary of State, a Republican, and a major villain in Democratic circles. Maybe Ken Blackwell rigged the process in Bush's favor, or maybe it was both. So I'm going to read to you what a man named Cliff Arnebeck, who was a top official at Common Cause in Ohio, the liberal group Common Cause in Ohio, here's what he said at Conyers Forum. Quote, there were two categories of fraud in the Ohio election. The first was the open and conspicuous fraud. The second was the hidden fraud that can only be disclosed by careful investigation. And it is this fraud, when you look at the statistical analysis of the vote in Ohio, you see these statistical anomalies that can only be explained by forms of computer manipulation that would not be conspicuous to election officials, that are a direct attack on the integrity of our election process. And we have considerable evidence that that's what took place. Wow. So that's what a top official of Common Cause testified, if you will, said to John Conyers Forum on Ohio and the 2004 election. Now, there was nothing to it. Nothing to it. But some Democrats adopted arguments like that. They thought that statistical anomalies could explain the Ohio results. They began to call their cause election integrity. The word integrity came up a bunch. And those Democrats became more, not less, more suspicious as time passed. And January 6th, now remember that's the date that Congress would count the electoral vote, January 6, 2005, was approaching. A group of Democrats decided to challenge the certification of Ohio's 20 electoral votes. They could use the Electoral Count Act to challenge the certification. If it was successful, it could switch the election from Bush to Kerry. So they were using the Electoral Count Act, which we've all heard of, now familiar 19th century law that requires a member of the House to rise an objection to the vote of a particular state, and then to enlist the support of at least one senator for the objection to go forward. Now, in 2001, 4 years earlier, Congressional Black Caucus had protested Bush's victory in Florida, but they had no senator to go along. Nothing happened. But in this time, in 2005, the Democrats did. Okay. Stephanie Tubbs Jones, who was a Democratic representative from Ohio, rose and said, I seek to object to the electoral votes of the state of Ohio on the grounds that they were not, under all the known circumstances, regularly given. And I do have a senator. That's what Stephanie Tubbs Jones said. Now, the Senator Jones had enlisted was Barbara Boxer, the Democrat from California. And under the Electoral Count Act, if a member of the House raised an objection and a member of the Senate endorsed that objection, both houses of Congress would retreat to their separate places to debate the objections. Okay. And this was to the count in Ohio. Now, so they go to the Senate. The Senate goes to its chamber. There was no member willing to join Boxer. Zero. Okay. So the final vote, they took a vote on this. It was 74-1, one being Barbara Boxer. Now, of course, you add 74 and 1, you get 75, and there's 100 members of the Senate. 25 did not vote. They were not in town for what was assumed to be a ceremonial session to count the electoral votes and certify George W. Bush's victory. So there was an interesting remark in this debate that took place from Carl Levin, who was a Democratic senator at the time. And he said that if he went along with Stephanie Tubbs Jones and Barbara Boxer, it would set a, quote, dangerous precedent. So here's what Levin said. I will vote against objecting to counting Ohio's electoral votes. Of course, I'm concerned by reports of irregularities across the country during the 2004 presidential election. But voting to throw out the electoral votes of a state in the absence of clear evidence that voting fraud in that state changed the outcome would set a dangerous precedent for future elections in which the majority party of Congress could overturn the outcome of a presidential election. Okay, so the vote in the Senate, 74-1, Barbara Boxer not convincing even a single Senate colleague to go along with her. Now, in the House, it was a different story. Stephanie Tubbs Jones had allies. Now, she didn't have enough to win, but enough to mount a serious protest. Now, she made her intentions clear at the beginning of the House debate. So I'm going to read what Stephanie Tubbs Jones said. This objection does not have at its root the hope or even the hint of overturning the victory of the president, but it is a necessary, timely and appropriate opportunity to review and remedy the most precious process in our democracy. I raise this objection neither to put the nation in the turmoil of a proposed overturned election, nor to provide cannon fodder or partisan demagoguery for my fellow members of Congress. I raise this objection because I am convinced that we as a body must conduct a formal and legitimate debate about election irregularities. I raise this objection to debate the process and protect the integrity of the true will of the people. Okay, so she says it's a protest. I don't really think I can overturn the results of the election. It's a protest. So the vote was taken, and 31 House Democrats, 31, voted against recognizing Ohio's electoral votes. They sided with Stephanie Tubbs Jones. Now, whatever they said about a protest, we're just doing this as a protest. The fact was, they voted against certifying the electoral votes that made the difference in the 2004 presidential election. If they had somehow succeeded, they would have, as Senator Levin had said, overturned the outcome of a presidential election. And they did it on the basis of internet rumors, wild theorizing, and Democratic policy grievances about the conduct of elections. That's what happened on January 6, 2005. And that is where, remember how we started this, that is where Representative Benny Thompson comes in. Now, at the time, Thompson was beginning his seventh term in the House and had become ranking member of the Homeland Security Committee. He was becoming an influential member of the House, although he's not as influential, by the way, as his colleague, Representative James Clyburn, who is now the third ranking Democrat in the House, who also voted against certifying Ohio's votes. Thompson could have joined the 88 Democrats who voted to go ahead and recognize the vote in Ohio. Or he could have just stayed away like 80 Democrats did. Again, they thought this was going to be a ceremonial occasion. Instead, Thompson joined the protest that would have overturned a presidential election had it succeeded. He voted against counting the electoral votes for Bush from Ohio. Okay, now the reason for telling this story, you all know that, is that Thompson is now the chairman of the House January 6th committee. He's now investigating Trump supporters who, in the aftermath of the 2020 election, acted on the basis of internet rumors, wild theorizing, and Republican policy grievances about the conduct of elections. On January 6th, 2021, Republicans and senators built on what Thompson and his colleagues did. In the House vote on the objection to the certification of Arizona's electoral votes, 121 Republicans voted against recognizing the Arizona vote. That was nearly four times the number of Democrats who voted against Ohio's certification 16 years earlier. 83 Republicans voted to confirm Arizona's vote, that is, to confirm Joe Biden's victory in Arizona. That's pretty close to the number of Democrats back in 2005 who voted to uphold Ohio's vote for Bush. In the Senate, six Republicans voted against certifying the Arizona vote, while 44 Republican senators voted to recognize Joe Biden's win in Arizona. So, in 2021, Benny Thompson's still in the House. And of course, guess which way he voted? He voted against the protesters who were concerned about election integrity. That is, he voted in favor of recognizing the Democratic candidate Joe Biden's win in Arizona. With a Democrat the winner of the presidential election, Thompson was not into protests. But 16 years earlier, with the parties in a different position, he was. So now, today, Thompson's investigation is covering the action of Republicans who in 2021 did what he did in 2005. How do you avoid the obvious charge of hypocrisy? We're going to talk about that next.
CPAC Chairman Matt Schlapp explains why firing Nancy Pelosi and winning the midterms needs to be our white-hot focus, or 2024 might not even matter. I'm Bill Walton. On the latest edition of The Bill Walton Show, Matt and I also discuss how a small number of leftists are ruining our corporations and institutions and why conservative ideas are better because they work and they make us happy. Follow The Bill Walton Show at Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, we're back. I said I was going to talk about Benny Thompson and the charge of hypocrisy. First, I did want to say, if you've been listening to the podcast, enjoying the podcast, maybe even learning from the podcast, a lot of history in today's, it'd be great if you could subscribe to the podcast. You can do it at iTunes, wherever you get your podcasts, and we would really, really appreciate it. So now Benny Thompson's investigation is covering the actions of Republicans who in 2021 did what he did in 2005. So how do you avoid the charge of hypocrisy? Well, one way is by not paying a whole lot of attention to it. Thompson and his Democratic chosen committee colleagues, January 6th committee, have focused on every aspect of Donald Trump's actions in the lead up to and during the Capitol riot. But they have had less to say about the central act of January 6th, which is the votes in Congress. After all, the reason Congress had gathered on January 6th was to certify the Electoral College results. Still, members of the January 6th committee have not made the votes in Congress a central part of their public hearings, barely any part at all. So maybe they'll do so later this year. Maybe that's what's going to happen. If they do, by the way, they can deal with the record of another committee member, the Democratic Representative Jamie Raskin, who objected to the electoral votes from Florida on January 6, 2017, when Congress certified Donald Trump's electoral victory. Now, at that time, there was no senator to go along with Raskin, so there's no formal vote on the issue, as there had been in 2005. So it was Thompson's vote from 2005 that was a concrete precedent for 2021 when some Republicans voted in protest. But others hoped to move beyond protest and actually overturn the results of an election. Now, what Thompson and his colleagues did, his Democratic colleagues did, in 2025 was new at the time. I mean, the Electoral Count Act had been passed in the 1870s, but it was new. This was new, what was done in 2005. Going to read to you from a CNN report on that day, January 6, 2005. It is only the second such challenge since the current rules for counting electoral votes were established in 1877. The last time was in 1969, and it concerned a so-called faithless elector, according to congressional researchers. So doing this, not a faithless elector, but actually challenging the results, getting a senator to support it, debating in the two houses, and then having a vote, that was new. Done for the first time by Representative Thompson and his colleagues. And what they did, their actions have had a lasting legacy. Go back before January 6, 2021. Go back to December 20th, 2020. So it's in the transition period between Trump and Biden. Before January 6th, Politico published an update on the resistors from 2005, those Democrats who believed that Bush stole the election in 2005. The short version of the story in Politico was many of them still believe they're right. So I'm going to read this to you from Politico. The loosely defined movement that launched back then has lived on. Most of its members are left-wing, though not all of them identify as Democrats. They've come to define their cause not around John Kerry's rightful presidency, but around the idea of election integrity. Some are fixated on voter suppression. Some subscribe to deep state conspiracies about the manipulation of voting machines. What they share is a conviction that the 2004 election was a sham and that it exposed a sweeping anti-democratic cabal. Wow. You know, I think I'm going to read that again. Most of its members are left-wing. Not all identify as Democrats. They've come to define their cause not around John Kerry's rightful presidency, but around the idea of election integrity. Some are fixated on voter suppression. Some subscribe to deep state conspiracies about the manipulation of voting machines. What they share is a conviction that the 2004 election was a sham and that it exposed a sweeping anti-democratic cabal. Now that sounds painfully familiar today. And it remains simply astonishing that Representative Benny Thompson, the man in charge of investigating the 2021 election challenge, actually did the same thing himself 16 years earlier. Wow. That, you know, it's just extraordinary. And you just don't hear about it all that much. But there's a lot of history behind those people sitting up on the dais in the January 6th committee. And that's what I wanted to talk about today. So thank you very much for listening. Always appreciate it when you can listen. And hope you'll subscribe. And hope you'll join us again soon for another edition of The Byron York Show.
Hey guys, we know it's hard to keep up with all the news these days, but don't worry, because we're here to talk and laugh about it all. More people need to be questioning why China is buying a bunch of U.S. land. Fully vaxxed Biden has the Rona, and the White House is still pushing off the fact that we're in a recession. Hey, it's the Chicks from the Chicks on the Right podcast. Download and subscribe to our daily podcast to hear us pick apart and pick on the news of the day. Politics to pop culture, nobody's safe, but it's all fun. Subscribe on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts.